on this edition for Sunday, March 29th, the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. In our signature segment, the complications of coronavirus for incarcerated people and welcoming a bundle of joy in trying times. Next on PBS NewsHour Weekend.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, Rosalind P. Walter, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments.
Consumer Cellular offers no-contract wireless plans that are designed to help you do more of the things you enjoy. Whether you're a talker, texter, browser, photographer, or a bit of everything, our U.S.-based customer service team is here to find a plan that fits you. To learn more, go to consumercellular.tv.
Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us. We are bringing you our broadcast again tonight from remote locations across the country, including our living rooms and bedrooms. Here in New York City, we are especially conscious of the risk each of us faces and the risk we might create for others if we gather news together. There are a lot of new developments in the coronavirus pandemic, so let's get started with today's top news. The federal government's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, warned today that the coming surge of cases in the coronavirus pandemic could cause more than 100,000 deaths in this country.
Looking at what we're seeing now, you know, I would say between 100 and 200,000 cases, but I don't want to be held to that because it's deaths. I mean, we're going to have millions of cases, but I just don't think that we really need to make a projection when it's such a moving target that you could so easily be wrong and mislead people.
As of this afternoon, in the United States, Johns Hopkins University tracked more than 124,000 coronavirus cases and more than 2,100 deaths. New York City continues to be the epicenter of the country's outbreak. More than 670 people in the city have died from the coronavirus. And after threatening to impose a quarantine on New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut yesterday, President Trump changed course late last night. In a tweet, the president said he consulted with governors and decided a quarantine will not be necessary. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention then issued a strong travel advisory urging residents of New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey to refrain from non-essential domestic travel for 14 days, effective immediately. Restrictions on movement and commerce are bringing severe hardship across the country. This morning, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said that the money promised to taxpayers in the more than $2 trillion economic stimulus bill is coming soon.
Within 3 weeks, we'll have direct deposit into people's accounts. For people where we don't have their direct deposit information, there'll be a web-based application. They can upload it. And for people who don't do that, well, there'll be checks in the mail. But we're going to try to get as much money into direct deposit as we can. That's the fastest way of getting hardworking Americans their money.
At least 22 people suffered minor injuries yesterday after a tornado slammed through parts of northeast Arkansas. Cell phone video captured the twister as it hit residential and commercial areas in the college town of Jonesboro. The tornado hurled wreckage and derailed a train. Officials said there were few injuries because many businesses were closed due to coronavirus restrictions. Globally, the number of confirmed COVID-19 infections and deaths continues to rise. There are now more than 684,000 infections and more than 32,000 deaths worldwide in the coronavirus pandemic, according to the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center. Today, Spain and Italy, the two hardest-hit countries in Europe, called on the European Union for more help in battling the virus. In Italy, officials announced that the death toll has exceeded 10,000, with more than 92,000 people infected. In Spain, the government imposed new restrictions on non-essential work, including a ban on commuting. It also reported 832 deaths in a single day. Altogether, the official death toll in Spain is more than 6,500. In Britain, Prime Minister Boris Johnson remains quarantined at 10 Downing Street after testing positive for COVID-19. He says his symptoms are mild and in a letter that will be sent to all households wrote that, quote, We know things will get worse before they get better. In India, thousands of migrant workers continue to flee major cities after the government declared a 21-day lockdown to prevent the spread of coronavirus. Prime Minister Narendra Modi asked for, quote, forgiveness in a radio address today amid criticism that the country was unprepared for how the decision would affect millions of poor Indians. For more news from across the country and the latest on the growing pandemic, visit pbs.org/newshour. This Wednesday is April 1st. That's the day the nation's nearly 44 million households that rent typically have to pay their landlords. Even before the massive economic disruption caused by the coronavirus pandemic, many renters were already stretching their budgets to afford housing. So what will happen to them now? I spoke earlier with Jenny Schutz, a housing economist at the Brookings Institution. There are lots of conversations about how to protect people from defaulting on their mortgages. What about renters?
Well, there's some attempts mostly by local governments to try to protect people from being evicted. So local governments can pass a temporary moratorium or halt on evictions. That doesn't dismiss the rent altogether. It just pushes it down the line. So that can provide some temporary relief for renters come April 1st. This is something that's appealing to local governments because it doesn't directly cost them money and it sort of pushes off the problem for a little while. But it's not a long-term solution unless we really give households enough money that they're going to be able to catch up on their debts at some point.
Do you think that the individual payments of possibly $1,200 or if you're married, $2,400, a one-time payment will do the trick?
That depends a lot on where you live. So in a metro area like Dallas, $1,200 a month is about the rent on a two-bedroom apartment. So that will at least cover a decent chunk of your expenses for the month. But in a place like, say, San Jose, the median rent is double that. And so there are a lot of people in expensive places for whom this is really not going to cover that much of your cost. What we know is that there are a lot of people who were, in fact, in unstable housing situations even before the current crisis hit. So about 20% of American households were already spending more than half of their monthly income on rent. That really doesn't leave a lot left over for other things. And there's essentially no financial cushion. So these are households who, in the best of circumstances, were just barely covering their housing costs each month. Any kind of disruption to their income, losing their job, losing hours or a shift, is going to mean that they can't pay all of their bills. So next week on April 1st, there are a lot of people who are simply going to come up short.
Lay out the kind of ripple effects of what happens when that check doesn't go through.
So the check that you write to the landlord goes to pay for a bunch of things that are kind of downstream from there. The first payment actually has to go to the local government for property taxes. So that even takes priority over the mortgage for landlords. And this is a time when we know that local governments are on the front lines providing a lot of direct services to taking care of people with public health concerns, making sure that communities are still up and functioning. And local governments are seeing their revenues drop. So it would really be a shame if their property taxes got cut even further. After that, there's the mortgage payment. And Congress is doing their best in the federal agencies to try to provide a little bit of cushion on mortgages. Even beyond that, the rent check pays income, pays salaries for a lot of people who work in the real estate industry. So, for instance, a large apartment building might have an on-site building super, they have maintenance staff, they have housekeeping staff. It's really important that we keep buildings clean and sanitized and fix things when they break so that that's still a safe and clean place for people to be living. If rent checks stop, then there are other people who are going to lose essentially their income, and it just cascades on down.
This seems to be exposing kind of an inherent inequity in how housing works in the United States.
Yes. We have had a system for a long time that has a bunch of gaps, and we're seeing what those look like now. So for those of us who study housing markets, we've noticed that low-income households have a very difficult time affording basic quality housing, and there's really not that much direct federal assistance that goes to low-income renters in particular. You know, we've seen also the number of homeless people has gone up over the last 5 years. It's impossible for them to shelter in place because they don't have a home. So we're starting to come to grips with the social costs for not providing decent quality, affordable, stable housing for everybody in society.
Jenny Schutz from Brookings, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Hari.
Yesterday, the first inmate in federal custody died from COVID-19, a 49-year-old Louisiana man named Patrick Jones. He died at the same facility where at least two dozen inmates and staffers have tested positive. This follows weeks of advocates for the rights of incarcerated people sounding the alarm about the potential spread of coronavirus in the nation's prisons and jails. PBS NewsHour Weekend's Yvette Feliciano spoke with lawyers, activists, and one mother with a son in prison, all of whom fear a COVID-19 disaster for those behind bars and those who work with them.
At a time when Americans are encouraged to practice social distancing for the foreseeable future, advocates for prisoners' rights note the majority of America's incarcerated are unable to do so.
This is a public health concern. The point is to get people who are going to get sick and die out of Rikers as soon as possible.
Staff attorneys working at New York's Legal Aid Society in Brooklyn say they're concerned for the health and safety of their clients after hearing stories about what is happening inside the city's detention centers.
You can't get away from anyone. People are housed with their beds, 100 people in a dorm. People are coughing. You can't get away. There's no soap. It's like a horror movie. It's terrifying.
As of today, more than 200 people have already tested positive for coronavirus at New York City's detention facilities, including not only the incarcerated, but also corrections employees. Like other courts around the country, New York City's have indefinitely postponed all criminal and civil jury trials due to the threat from the virus. Among other things, that means people who are being held before they've been tried or convicted of anything will have to wait longer in crowded conditions. And most often, those people are poor.
Well, I think it speaks to poverty. It speaks to being able to afford bail. And a lot of our clients just cannot afford to pay the bail.
This 51-year-old mother from the Bronx says her 25-year-old son has been kept in a Manhattan jail, convicted of nothing, since 2017. His trial date, set for this Tuesday, was postponed indefinitely. She spoke to us Thursday, telling us what her son, who is diabetic and suffers from seizures, had told her. She asked us to keep both their identities and the details of his case private.
Well, he's in the housing unit where the first inmate tested positive for the coronavirus a couple of weeks ago. And I have to tell you, since then, every time he's called, there's quite a bit of confusion and panic and fear and anger. Absolutely no hand sanitizer is allowed there, so they don't have that at all. They've been issued each a mask as of 3 days ago. So they finally got masks yesterday. As a matter of fact, three more inmates fell sick, got a fever, and were removed and taken out. My son has not been proven guilty of any crime. They're simply awaiting trial. Therefore, you can kill someone there. They can die there, and it would have been for no reason other than this person just hadn't gone to trial and gotten convicted yet.
Last week, Mayor Bill de Blasio announced that New York City would begin releasing some individuals who have been arrested for minor crimes but not yet tried, as well as those whose health problems make them most vulnerable to infection. But as of Thursday, city officials said that fewer than 200 eligible prisoners had been released. Lawyers at Legal Aid say there are thousands of incarcerated people who fit the profile of those who should be released, and that the city is moving too slowly.
What we're encountering in Brooklyn is trying to get individual clients released, and there are so many cases being brought and only one or two judges to handle them. And so cases that were filed last week have still not been heard.
You know, each attorney is like filing papers and calling this person and calling that person and getting nowhere. It can't be this individual case by case basis that takes weeks and weeks. In the meantime, people are getting sick. People are going to die. It needs to happen much faster.
Attorneys at the Legal Aid Society filed several lawsuits on behalf of dozens of incarcerated defendants over the last week. Last Thursday, a Manhattan Supreme Court judge ordered the release of 16 additional people, ruling that the city and state violated their constitutional rights by detaining them during the COVID-19 outbreak. Dr. Amanda Klonsky is an advocate for prisoners' rights who has spent the last two decades teaching and running education programs in jails and prisons.
It's almost as if we've designed a petri dish to spread the pandemic and to heighten this crisis.
She recently wrote an op-ed for the New York Times about the dangers the coronavirus poses to those behind bars and those in contact with them.
If there's an outbreak in a jail or a prison in a city like Los Angeles, Chicago, Washington, D.C., it has the potential to overwhelm our hospitals, our medical care systems, right? How will corrections officers transport sick individuals from jails and prisons to local hospitals safely without infecting themselves and others?
Klonsky, who is based in Illinois, has been tracking COVID-19 infections in prisons and jails around the country and says so far the disease has entered detention facilities in more than a dozen states.
More than 40% of people in prisons already have a chronic health condition. Medical care is in short supply. Medication is in short supply. Access to doctors may be impossible. We're simply incapable right now of meeting the demand if there's a major outbreak or cluster. And public health officials and experts are telling us it's not if, but when that happens.
As of Friday, 14 incarcerated people in federal custody have tested positive for the coronavirus and have been isolated. 13 prison staffers have tested positive as well. The Federal Bureau of Prisons has implemented social distancing measures in its facilities, and incarcerated people there won't be allowed visits from family, friends, or attorneys until mid-April. The BOP is also quarantining all new inmates entering its 122 correctional facilities for 14 days. Yet Klonsky worries that efforts such as these, which she admits are intended to mitigate the spread of coronavirus inside prisons and jails, could actually come at the cost of the rights of incarcerated people.
In some places, we're hearing that people are losing access to phone calls, to letters, and to other kinds of communication with the outside. Prisons are already a black box, right? We often don't know, the public doesn't know what's happening and what kinds of inhumane conditions are emerging on the inside.
On Thursday, U.S. Attorney General William Barr issued a directive to the Bureau of Prisons urging the release of some elderly and chronically ill prisoners in BOP custody.
An outbreak in a jail or a prison will be a death sentence for many thousands of people. And so we're asking our state and local governments, the federal government, the Trump administration, to take this threat seriously, to release as many people as possible. It's the only way that we can reduce the number of deaths.
It is estimated that at least 229 million Americans are now being asked to stay home. One of them, Fulton Leroy Washington, is a former prison inmate turned celebrated artist. He goes professionally by the name Mr. Wash. He recently spoke with NewsHour Weekend's Christopher Booker about what sheltering in means to someone who's already spent more than two decades doing it.
We were planning on telling you the story of Mr. Wash and his extraordinary paintings under different circumstances. Sentenced to serve life on a nonviolent drug conviction, a crime he says he didn't commit, Mr. Wash was one of hundreds of thousands of black men sent away during America's war on drugs. It's a 1990s three strikes you're out story, one that's uniquely American. But this Mr. Wash story isn't about his sentencing. It's about what he did during his 21 years in prison.
I spent my time doing exactly what I'm doing right now, painting.
Mr. Wash painted a lot, and he painted very, very well. So well that when he applied for clemency and somehow it was granted, he wondered if his artwork had anything to do with it. But that is a story for another time.
Let me close this window. This light coming in is making it glare.
Like so many Americans, Mr. Wash is now stuck at home, living under California's shelter-in-place order.
This kind of reminds me of during the time of being incarcerated, they call lockdown. You go on lockdown. When you're on lockdown in prison, you can't shut your ears off. Here I hear things, cars going by, the sounds of the sirens, fire trucks, and it makes you wonder, is somebody hurt, somebody injured? Is that a fire truck? Is that an ambulance? Is that a police? In prison, you hear the guards running, and you wonder if it's a fight or a stabbing. You're just using your imagination to figure out what's really going on.
Do you think your time in prison, strangely enough, gave you an ability to make it through this period in ways that, say, I'm not used to?
Yes, I do. I think my time in prison because I never waste time. See, we all get an X amount of time to live, to enjoy life. And what you do with it is your own. In prison, I didn't waste time. So I find myself back in a very familiar situation. I'm learning how to use the computer. This is my first time ever doing something like what we're doing now. This is brand new, this whole Zoom thing. So I'm learning new technology. I'm still working on my case to prove my innocence. And I'm still painting, creating what's going on in the world today.
Do you have friends and family that have not been incarcerated that are calling you for advice, saying, Mr. Wash, what should I be doing? How should I be getting through this?
Yeah, I do. I do get those calls. People call and they be like, man, what are you doing? I said, you have to have a routine. And the routine need to use the energy that you have.
Mr. Wash gave us a video demonstration of what he was talking about.
Let's get moving. Let's do a good morning workout.
Basically, exercise. You want to exercise and stretch your body in the morning because you're not going to get a chance to walk around and run and do all this stuff. Set the coffee water on, get it, take your shower, come back, drink a cup of coffee. And for me, I go to the paintbrush and I start to paint.
And this is what Mr. Wash has been doing for nearly 12 hours a day, a process that he captures and shares on his Instagram account. This piece is for an upcoming exhibit of LA artists to be held at the Huntington and Hammer Museums in July.
We have a little ways to go with this. I have about 3 weeks to finish this piece.
And who are the two faces that we see?
This is Mundane and his grandson. He's the owner of Bees Markets out of Kansas City. He was an ex-inmate. It was serving, I believe, a life sentence at the time when I was.
And is this changing your creative approach to your painting? Are you having all kinds of new ideas come to you?
I'm having so many ideas, Chris, that come to me that I would love to paint. This is history, and it should be recorded. No different than everything that happened back with Picasso and Rembrandt and all them. They captured their history moments. I need to be one of the artists that capture that moment.
And when social distancing is a thing of the past, we will be there with Mr. Wash to share with you what he came up with.
Graduations, weddings, even memorial services can be postponed during a pandemic, as painful as that might be for those involved. But what about life events that cannot wait? Giving birth, for example. NewsHour Weekend special correspondent Carla Murthy spoke to new mom Christina Lewis Halpern about what it's like to become a parent while so much feels like it's crumbling all around you.
As the news was getting more dire, I mean, especially you're in the epicenter, you're in New York City, how did you cope?
You know, it was really, really scary. I'll say one thing, when people would ask me how I'm doing, I'd say, you know, we're kind of great. You know, as a family, we really had something great to look forward to. It does look like children are really not affected, you know, so badly by COVID. And so that's really the most important thing, you know, like a happy, healthy baby at the end of it. And so we still always like had that, you know, reasonably to look forward to. Like, I'm not confused about what I need to do. You know, we need to stay in the city near our doctors. And just ride this thing out.
Tell me about that. The moment you saw your daughter.
It was very dramatic. They stopped me in the wheelchair at the door to check my temperature, even though I was writhing in the throes of labor because it was happening really fast. So when she was born and I saw her for the first time, and it was a little miracle. Like I couldn't believe it. There she was, and it was done, and she was healthy, and I was healthy, and we were all there, and I've never been more relieved in my entire life. Yeah, she just woke up. Hi. Yeah, so, you know, one thing now is that we were always planning to nest, you know, so in a strange way, my plan hasn't changed at all. I was always planning to be not working, not really going that many places, not traveling too much. So we're really, really lucky and happy. And that's what I wish for everyone else pregnant in the pandemic. It can be, it will be, I hope, a source of joy and you know, in all this, in this terrible, terrible time we're living in.
That's all for this edition of PBS NewsHour Weekend. For the latest news updates, visit pbs.org/newshour. I'm Hari Srinivasan. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and have a good night.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, Rosalind P. Walter, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments. Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.